Rising Up by Evie Woolmore, read by Kate Daubney. 2nd of July, Tom. Tom wakes with a start, yawning broadly and smearing his dribbling mouth on his sleeve. He must have been dreaming of home. No, further back than that, of childhood, of cosy evenings kneeling on a mat of newspapers in front of the fire, carefully polishing the brasses while his grandmother read to him from Austen or the Bronte sisters.
"Please not the girls' books again, Grandma," he'd protest. "Can't we have the Musketeers or Monte Cristo?"
But she would only raise a grey eyebrow, causing a slight tremor in the severe knot of hair that crowned her head, and remind him that the reader got to choose the book. Tom blinks in the half-light of early evening and takes in his surroundings. The two faux Danish modern chairs in airline orange, the low melamine coffee table with its splayed black plastic legs, the wall of empty bookcases, his hefty rucksack abandoned in a heap by the sitting room door, his walking boots kicked off beside the chair, their tongues wagging and laces released. The unfamiliar view from the 9th floor. He yawns again, rubs his eyes, then pushes himself slowly to his feet, stepping over his boots and padding across the thin grey carpet to the badly fitting glass doors that open out onto the ledge of an excuse for a balcony. Up close, the low buzz of the wind shaping the corner of the building becomes a pursed shriek as it forces its way through the shabby metal window frames. Warsaw must be bitterly cold in winter. Today it's just wet. The trees are lush and heavy with rain, every leaf one of a shower of tiny green umbrellas above the shiny streets below. Tom watches young people dodge and run between cars that suck up puddles into spray, and old people who trudge and potter, hatted and scarfed. It's not cold, but they are wrapped up against something. And down there, to the left, just beyond the corner of the building, a solitary mound of grey rock, outlined by clusters of flickering tea lights. He could see it better from the kitchen, he thinks, and better still close up. But it will keep until tomorrow, at least. Tom exhales noisily, if only to fill the room with his own presence, trying to remember what book his grandmother had been reading to him in his dream. David Copperfield? Wuthering Heights? Several minutes after waking, he can still recall her voice, a reminder of home, a reminder of why he's here, peering out from this borrowed nest above unfamiliar avenues. It's a little weird, though. He scrubs with his palms at the 7:30 shadow piercing his chin, trying to wake himself up a bit and haul himself into the present. Not a Bronte, no. Pride and Prejudice? Yes, perhaps, though it wasn't his grandmother's favourite. She was no lover of Austen's tortuous evolutions of romance, irritated in this case by Bingley's lack of mastery over his sisters and by Darcy's interference. She always said that Elizabeth Bennet should have accepted the pompous ass after his first proposal halfway through the book and saved everyone a lot of trouble, including the dear reader. Looking out over these foreign streets, Tom remembers her decree that you knew if you loved them from the first moment you looked into their eyes. Procrastination is merely a literary device. But then, of course, she would have said that. He knows that now. At the time, it made no sense at all, and he had grown up thinking her at odds with herself, lacking the emotional nostalgia that should have been her entitlement as a young war widow, a lifetime of marriage blown off at the neck by a mortar on the beach at Dieppe. At 9 or 10 years old, Tom could not have understood that she had become too practical to be romantic. But now, at 32, he finds her articulate in the swift and terminal crush of passion. A passion that had nothing to do with Dieppe at all. a passion that had instead hacked his family apart and left comfortable histories in tatters, while in their urn her ashes swirled in the slipstream kicked up by all the fuss she'd left behind.